You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
In which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up. And we're still talking about revolution.
Hello, and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, graphic discussion of deaths in custody, traumatic prison experiences and discussion about strip searches. On this week's show, I will be yarning with Kelly Flanagan, First Nations advocate from Fig Jam. Listeners may recall that I interviewed Kelly along with Karen Fletcher from Flat Out about the Victorian Government's Correction Amendment Bill 2026 No Air in Prison Bill, which overrides the Victorian Human Rights Charter. She comes back onto the show today to talk about her lived experience of prison. And we will also touch on some findings of a report where the Human Rights Law Centre and Flat Out are calling on the Victorian Government to establish a dedicated legal service for women, trans and gender diverse people in prison to challenge human rights abuses and hold authorities accountable. Then we will bring you another yarn with Tabitha Lean, who is a First Nations former prisoner, member of the National Network of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, working to end the criminalisation and imprisonment for everyone. So basically we're going to be interviewing Kelly from Fig Jam first, and Fig Jam has a lot of advocates who have had lived experience of prison. Lastly, we will discuss a bill that is being initiated by Senator Lydia Thorpe Tabitha will talk about that. And that's the Crimes Amendment Prohibiting the Strip Searching of Children Bill 2026, which would ban strip searches of anyone under 18 under any circumstances. Finally, we will hear from Jared Sandal Hay, and he's an NDIS participant and proud disabled man with 15 years experience in disability advocacy, systemic reform and community leadership across Victoria and New South Wales. He is interim president of People with Disability Australia, and he will talk about the passage of the National Disability Insurance Scheme Amendment securing the NDIS for Future Generations Bill 2026, condemning Parliament for proceeding despite the overwhelming evidence of the unacceptable and foreseeable harm these changes will cause people with disability, families and carers, and the Australian economy. So quite a few bills are being discussed here. I don't think I'd like being in Parliament, to be honest. I'm glad I'm a radio broadcaster and not a politician. But anyway, we're going to be going through to an announcement and we will speak with Kelly shortly.
One Nation is hoping to break through in the Victorian election. Anti-racists are out to stop them. Unite Against Racism has called a public forum at Trades Hall in Carlton, 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 9th of September. Be there to hear great speakers and get involved. Unite Against Racism is initiated by the Refugee Action Collective, a 3CR supporter.
And you're tuned into the Doin' Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. And I'm delighted to welcome Kelly to the program. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, Marissa. How are you?
Not bad, and you?
I'm actually really good. I noticed that you're also struggling a little bit for words. I'm a bit the same today as well. Feels like a Friday.
I know. It does feel like a Friday. And, you know, it's so horrible with all these global issues that are happening all over the world, the stuff with Nepal and all the climate change. And I'm struggling really because, in all honesty, Kelly, I feel quite overwhelmed at the moment with everything that's been happening. And this show really, in some ways, takes a lot out of me. In many times, it's awful with so much lived experience that's happening.
Yeah, look, I think that's like really reasonable to say because it's. I noticed before you were talking about like Parliament, and I've been spending a little bit of time in Parliament lately, and I'm finding that it can be really exhausting and kind of overwhelming in the fact that there's not a lot of appreciation for human beings, really.
I totally agree with you. And I actually had a little bit of a bug over the weekend as well. So, but let's talk about this because we're talking off air about how it's really important to have a dedicated legal service needed to challenge rights abuses of women, transgender and diverse people in Victorian prisons. And I was consulting with the Human Rights Law Centre about this report. Can you talk about some of your experience in prison? First of all, talk about what land you're from, and then tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've experienced in prison that's relevant to this report.
Yeah, awesome. Well, so I'm Kelly Flanagan, and I'm a proud Wiradjuri woman, first up. And I think it's really important to firstly talk about, you know, people in prison. They experience serious human rights breaches, and there's currently no standalone dedicated Victorian legal service specialising in challenging those conditions. And I guess what that really means is, like, when it comes to things like solitary confinement, lockdowns, parole, even things like access to healthcare, including, like, gender-affirming healthcare, there's really nobody that can help navigate those systems if you are being unfairly treated inside prison. It's currently a really secretive environment.
It really is. And in fact, with this media release that Flat Out and the Human Rights Law Centre have put out, there's a new report just for listeners, the benefit of listeners, called Dignity Behind Bars, which highlights a critical gap in access to justice for people in prison. And it talks in here about solitary confinement. Now, you would have experienced solitary confinement, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I did. I experienced a one block of 5 months, a five-month period. I found it, I mean, alongside the whole fact that there's no human engagement, no meaningful contact, and the phone, you know, getting on the phone is so limited, like we're talking, if you're lucky, once every couple of days. The mental health can really decline in those environments, and I think that one factor to why people really need this legal service, because if you are experiencing those things, you have rights around how often you should be able to be out in the yard or using the phone, or and it's a perfect place. It's a breeding ground for officers who tend to break some of the rules. It's a really great place for them to be in the prison because no one's really monitoring that particular part of the prison. It's pretty much like just cowboys running the place however they want.
I know. And it's a practice prohibited under international law, isn't it?
I know. And I feel like for me, when we talk about human rights laws, like it's such a huge thing. But I'm really feeling lately that in the community, especially in Parliament, it's like human rights. What rights? Because if they're not agreeing with certain things, they're just changing the rules to suit what they want. And I'm really disappointed about that.
It's absolutely deplorable, isn't it, Kelly? I mean, even, you know, we were talking off air, you and I, about parole. So access to parole is described in the report as a crisis, with the Victorian government enacting increasingly restrictive parole laws. Can you talk about that?
Totally. I think I did experience this in 2024. I was due to get parole, and there was, you know, I had a place to go, but it was in another state, so they couldn't transfer me. And then so they said to me, we have no housing, you have to find your own housing. But the thing is, I couldn't go out to view houses. I couldn't go online to apply for houses. So basically all of my avenues to find a place was completely shut down. And so I almost did my whole entire sentence, which was about 14 months parole. I almost did the whole lot of my parole sentence in prison because they couldn't accommodate me or couldn't give me options for housing. Although before I went into prison, I had a home, had all of the things. And so they, you know, once I've completed my sentence, there was kind of no help at the exit.
Exactly. How would you have been, how would it have been better for you with a dedicated legal service, do you think, Kelly?
Oh, it would have been, so with a dedicated legal service, what could have happened is when my parole was due, they could have had the paperwork or you know, helped me navigate that or the rules around that long before I was due for parole so that I was ready to go. They could be out there doing things like making sure that the prison are following up on those appointments, giving women access to services that can help them get housing. There's so many things that law firm can offer that sometimes in prisons you just like fall through the cracks and you know, you might have understaffed. So there's no one really following up on all of these parole conditions, appointments, housing opportunities. And we know already that the prisons are like not running with the right amount of staff. So the first people that kind of suffer with that are people who are not high risk, high needs, and who are generally going to be released quite soon.
Exactly. No, I'm so glad you've talked about that. And what about as an Aboriginal woman, Kelly?
Yeah,
I mean, because it goes back to colonisation, doesn't it, really?
Colonisation is at the forefront of everything, right? It's one of those conversations we have where we know it's the reason that things are the way they are, and we're still really hesitant to change some of those things. You know, it's wild that we have these reports and all these things, but if we're not actioning them, what good are they? I feel like, you know, having parole and being back, you know, with family and going back out to country, it's what begins to heal us once we've done that prison time. And so if that's delayed more and we're not being given the opportunity to connect, then,
yes,
you know, we're really not, we're setting people up to fail.
Exactly. But, I mean, you know, this is why I like having people like yourself, Nina, you know, Georgina, you know, to come onto the show to talk about prison. I mean, it's good to interview lawyers, and believe me, lawyers are a really important part of this show, but it's always good to always go back to the lived experience, and we provide a safe environment for that to happen on this show.
Yeah, and I think that's so important as well for the listeners to know, is that, Marissa, you've been such a dedicated, you know, person when it comes to calling out some of this stuff, and like having lived experience, people come on and talk about the struggles and what's happening. And a lot of the time we talk about stuff with you because we feel safe enough to, you know, share this stuff and know that, you know, you're going to kind of get that message out there the right way. You know, I hate the fact that sometimes people cherry pick things, especially in main media.
Yep.
Drives me wild, you know, and I love that when we come on the show, it's always a really, you know, strong conversation around the actual things that are the problem.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember it was really powerful when we talked about, you know, strip searching and the report with the three of you.
Mm-hmm. I know, that was such a fun interview, actually. I left going, you know, we've really got to do that more often.
Absolutely.
It was a bit of a party in the studio, you know.
I know.
The only person we were missing was Joe. Where was Joe?
Yeah, that's right. So with this particular report, you know, I think with some of the other things that were highlighted, and you made this point at the beginning of today's yarn about that there's difficulty accessing healthcare, including prenatal, pregnancy and gender-affirming care.
Mm. I mean, that's huge. When we think about being pregnant or we think about gender-affirming, like these are really huge milestones in someone's medical journeys. And the fact that they're not, I mean, there's so many things I can tell you that, like, happens in the prisons around, like, dodgy medical staff, especially when it comes to pregnancy as well. Like, people going out for appointments or appointments getting cancelled last minute when they're late in pregnancy, the gender-affirming, you know, medications and you know, when they stop those medications without any reason or they, because they play games like that. When you've been in there, you realise, like, you don't know this stuff until you go in, but they play games with stuff, and it's shit, but it's what happens.
Absolutely. And with the prison population skyrocketing as the Victorian government funnels an escalating number of people into prisons, we've also got to look at the fact that there's an urgent need for people to access legal support, especially because First Nations people are overrepresented.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, it's a win-win, right? Like, I feel like by having a service that can operate kind of in this prison scenario that's dedicated to prisoners, it's actually going to do a lot of good. Like, I think prisons are quite sceptical of it because, you know, they don't like things that aren't in their control. But this is a real way to move forward and make sure that individual, you know, people have their needs met. And they could also work alongside the prison to kind of formulate, you know, plans and figure out where things aren't working currently and try to improve it so that there's less violence, that there's less, you know, people falling through the cracks and returning back to prison. I mean, if the prison is really genuinely wanting to see people be rehabilitated and go out and live good lives, then they really need to start looking at things like lawyers that are dedicated to people.
Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit more about the parole? What actually happened with you?
Yeah, so my parole was, so I'm originally from Queensland and I wanted to go back home to Queensland to my family because I lost my housing down here. So, and I wanted to stay clean and sober. And so I thought going back to Queensland, moving in with my family would be the best option. And I was told that I could apply for that. So I applied 12 months, you know, like when I could, which is 12 months before your parole date. But the my prison caseworker didn't tell me that the chances of that being approved was like practically nil because the programs that I needed to do in the community weren't available in Queensland. And so I wasted that whole, because it's a big process, it takes about 10 months to get any word back. I wasted that 10 months on applying for something that was, you know, not likely to go through. If there was someone like a lawyer who was able to kind of give me information around that, I wouldn't have even applied. I would have been immediately looking for other accommodation in the state because, you know, it wouldn't have been feasible for me to go to Queensland. They would have known that. Or they could have kept the prison, you know, on track with some of these things. Or because I'm sure the prison knows that you can't get parole in other states if certain programs aren't available. Yeah, and I think that was the first thing that was really, really frustrating. And so I only had about 6 months left of my whole sentence because I'd spent most of my parole in prison. And they kind of found me housing last minute. And I only ended up doing 3 months parole in the community when I was meant to have done, I think, 16 months in the community.
What?
Yeah, so I nearly did my whole prison sentence, which was like 3.5 years.
So why weren't you given an independent lawyer?
Because I was working a lot with VALs kind of in the, that's not really their role, but
no.
I kind of built rapport with them. And so they were kind of helping me in some places, but you just don't have access to that stuff. You rely 100% on your prison caseworker to ensure that they're doing all the right things for you. And I, like, honestly, sometimes they don't. There's so many
That's
women
right.
on their caseload. They don't have time to, like...
There's no funding.
No, they don't. Like, one caseworker can have, like, up to 50 women at one time.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, there's a beautiful quote here in this media release, because you know about the media release jointly done with Flatout.
Yeah.
And the Human Rights Law Centre with Karen Fletcher. You know, she says the rights of people in prison are being ignored with impunity, without access to specialist legal advice, and representation on prison issues like solitary confinement, access to healthcare, family visits, phone calls and parole, their rights under Australian international law are only theoretical. That's what happened to you.
Exactly what happened to me. Yeah, and I remember reaching out to Flat Out when I was, Karen in particular, when I was in prison, and she came into the prison and, you know, talked to me about my situation. And it was like I felt so, even the fact that she came in, I was very close to kind of getting out, but it was just someone to talk to tell that issue to make me feel like I'm being heard. And I can just imagine that being offered to other women. Like it would be such a beautiful way to be able to kind of communicate with someone else in regards to these issues and feel like you're being heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an absolute, it is an absolute atrocity. So I'm meant to be talking to Tabitha Lean, but she is unavailable. Something must have happened. Are you happy to extend our yarn together, Kelly, for a bit longer?
Look, I've got a few more minutes so we can have a chat about, you know, some of the stuff, some of the other stuff in the report.
Tell me.
Look, to be honest, I think when we're looking at people with, you know, issues in prison and are kind of breaching people's rights, we really need to start asking ourselves things like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Kind of in a scenario where we're questioning whether prisons actually care about people's human rights.
Exactly. And in fact, one of the recommendations of the report is that the Victorian government has still not acted on a 2022 recommendation from its own cultural review of the adult custodial correction system to establish a dedicated and independent advice service for people in prison. And we were just talking about that before.
And yeah, I think another really important topic is, like, I've been doing a little bit of work around OPCAT. So OPCAT is was meant to be sort of taken serious around 2017. And I think we're 2025, 2026, we still have had no movement whatsoever on that in Victoria. And I think that's interesting because the more and more I spend time around, like, Parliament, and it's really clear that the prison doesn't want to have an independent person who oversees them. It's really clear.
That's exactly right.
And
this is the thing. Go on.
I was just, you know, in my mind I'm thinking, like, they must really know, like, the Minister for Corrections, you know, and people that are kind of in that, you know, have those portfolios, they know there's a serious problem in prison. Like, they know that they've got major, like, infrastructure issues, no staff, not treating prisoners correctly. I mean, it's even to the point where I think, like, prison officers are walking off the job and stuff like that. So it's, they know there's issues. So I feel like they're trying to avoid putting, you know, an oversight body.
Exactly. It's 4:23 and we're nearing the end of our yarn with Kelly. And is there anything more you wanted to say, Kelly, before we finish?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, my message to the listeners and to the government is, like, people in prison, they still have human rights. And if those rights are breached, there has to be somewhere independent they can turn to for help. And I think the report shows us there are serious gaps in Victoria right now, and we need a properly funded independent legal service designed with, you know, people and lived experience that cannot only help individuals but also expose the systemic problems and hold the prison systems to account. I think that's my message for listeners to take away, is putting lived experience at the forefront of some of these decisions moving forward really ensures that we're hearing the voices of the people that, you know, that inside the prison.
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's right. Kelly, you've been an absolute delight to work with today. I mean, I think we did it. We actually did it together as a team. We worked together to expose the atrocities that have happened in prison.
Totally.
And, of course, there's a lot more work to do. But what is important here, as I said, is the lived experience, the fact that you and I were able to actually look at the report, and actually look at the lived experience. And that's what was important.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marissa, thanks again, because I feel like without your show, having lived experience, you know, folks come on and talk about this stuff, we lose that space to be able to talk about it. So thanks for providing a space for us to come and talk.
So important. I keep saying to people, it's not about academics. It's not about having a thesis here. It's about talking about the real stuff that happens.
Exactly. Real things need, like, real solutions, and real solutions are people with lived experience.
Wonderful. Kelly, thank you so much for coming onto the program, and I hope to have you back soon.
Thanks, Marissa. I really appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye.
Every day, people in prisons across Australia are subjected to strip searching. It is an unnecessary, degrading, and deeply harmful practice that must end. It involves a person literally being stripped of their dignity, forced to remove their clothing for their bodies to be inspected by prison guards, being forced to submit to humiliating requests like bending, squatting, and spreading their legs. In many prisons, people are subjected to this repeatedly and routinely. Children as young as 10 years old are being forced to remove their clothes and have their bodies inspected by adults. We're calling on the federal government to stop state-sanctioned violence by ending the routine, unregulated use of strip searching in prisons across Australia. Go to endstripsearching.com. Together, we can demand a system that upholds dignity, safety, and human rights. Fig Jam is a 3CR supporter.
Join the Homeless Persons Union Victoria on our new radio show on the mighty 3CR.
Listen in as we embark on a public experiment to grow a homelessness union from the grassroots and on the radio.
Tuned In, Locked Out is a new monthly show on 3CR that seeks to grow a homelessness union in public view and to a wide audience.
We'll speak to people involved in community development, to allies, activists, and anyone who has anything interesting to say about homelessness issues in Melbourne today. Most importantly, we will centre the voices of people who are homeless in Melbourne and beyond.
Featuring interviews, guests, as well as analysis of policy, laws and media discourse that affect the homeless community.
Tune in on 3CR 855am on Tuesday, September the 8th, 12am to 1am for our premier broadcast.
Tuned In, Locked Out is a proud affiliate show of 3CR.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, we're about
feminisms in their multitudes,
First Nations sovereignty,
land back,
trans liberation, poo-poo on the turfs,
abolition,
anti-racism,
sex worker rights,
South liberation,
disability justice,
anti-imperialism,
decolonisation,
an end to borders,
workers' justice,
and so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
Hi, I'm Cam Smith from Yanar Pasaran.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Andy, quick question. The commercial media, that provides a voice to marginalised communities, doesn't it? And as governments around the world take a turn to the far right, it provides a critical anti-fascist analysis?
Cam, how many times do I have to tell you this? No, that's not the case.
That's not good. So who is doing all that?
Cam, community media, including 3CR, Melbourne's community radio.
And how can we support 3CR in doing that?
We can subscribe, Cam, at any time.
By visiting 3cr.org.au or calling the station on 9419 8377. Subscribe to 3CR.
And stay anti-fascist.
And you just previously heard an interview with Kelly Flanagan, First Nations advocate from FigJam, which is a collective that works with folks in prison. And we did an interview about the Human Rights Law Centre and flat out calling on the Victorian government to establish a dedicated legal service for women, trans and gender diverse people in prison to challenge human rights abuses and hold authorities accountable. People with Disability Australia has condemned the passage of the National Disability Insurance Scheme Amendment securing the NDIS for Future Generations Bill 2026, condemning Parliament for proceeding despite the overwhelming evidence of the unacceptable and foreseeable harm these changes will cause people with disabilities, families and carers and the Australian economy. Jared Sandal-Hay is an NDIS participant and proud disabled man with 15 years experience in disability advocacy, systemic reform and community leadership across Victoria and New South Wales. He is interim president of People with Disability Australia and executive manager at Star Victoria and has worked with state and federal disabled people's representative organisations. Jared is committed to advancing disability rights, choice and control and ensuring the diverse voices of people with disability driving systemic change. And I wanted to actually welcome Jared to the program. Hi.
Hi, good to be with you. How are you?
Lovely to have you, Jared. It's really wonderful to have you on the show. How does People with Disability Australia feel about the passage of this bill?
Yeah, we're quite devastated. We're quite angry and we're quite worried. This bill presents the biggest risk to disabled people we have seen in a very, very long time. So we are quite upset. More so around what you were just talking about. We have spent months and months, almost years, talking about these concerns that we have and our words and our stories have gone unmet with the passage of this bill that will cause an enormous amount of harm to disabled people across the country.
Exactly, because, I mean, all this stuff that's happened with the Royal Commission and all these essential supports that are meant to be coming through, it hasn't happened, has it?
No, it hasn't. And this bill does nothing to address anything in the Royal Commission. This bill didn't do anything around even the NDIS review, which wasn't great in itself, but it was better than this. This is quite a step back for people with disabilities.
Exactly. Jared, it's so lovely to have you on the show. What does this bill mean for people from participants and people with disability right now?
Well, it's a bit of a slow burn. We're going to see these changes come in over time. There are things that are different starting last week, and then they're progressively going to come in. Big changes are coming in October, where people will see a reduction in their funding by 50% for their funding to go out, to go to work, to go to see family, to go to doctor's appointments. But that is happening in the next 4 weeks. And then by the end of 2028-ish, we're going to see the beginning of over 200,000 people with autism being removed from the NDIS with, at the moment, nowhere to go. So it's quite alarming.
Wow. So you're saying that in October there's going to be a lot of changes. I mean, you've actually described things really well, actually, because you've talked a lot about the fact that there's going to be changes from people with disability. And what are some of these big changes, do you think? I know you were saying they're going to get rid of people with autism, but what were you saying about the supports? You're saying that 50%, they're going to take off 50% of the supports. Is that right?
Yeah. So from October, there's a bucket of money called social and participation. And what people use that money for is everything that they do outside of the home. So doctor's appointments and work and catching up with friends. Maybe there might be carers for kids, there might be parents. Is used to that stuff. So from October, anyone with that funding will start to see a reduction of 50%. But I want to make one thing really clear. You asked me how does this change?
Why are you eligible for what, sorry?
I want to be very clear and answer your question about what changes. And I guess what we had before was a human rights model. And now what we have is a financial restraint on those human rights. We have a bill that says, yes, you have human rights, but only if it costs this much money.
Yeah.
Which is quite devastating.
So you're saying then that what you're saying basically then there, Jared, is that the bill is actually going to be taking away the human rights of people with disability by removing essential supports.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're going to say. What you're going to see is less people in the community. What we're going to have is more people locked away in their homes. They're not going to have community. They're not going to have family. They're going to have four walls and maybe enough support to get out of bed, but nothing else. And for everyone, but especially some communities where people have intellectual disabilities or maybe deafblind, those communities really depend on this type of funding. But the idea that there's a financial restraint just undermines the NDIS completely.
So basically what you're saying is that the funding that's going to be reduced is going to hurt people. I mean, I'll give you an example, you know, from what I can gather here from some of the research that I've done. You've got blind and vision impaired people, for example, that would have the capacity building. And in that, what would happen is their computer training could be taken away and all their braille technology, and then they wouldn't be able to function properly in society.
Yeah, that could happen. To be fair, the government says that that's not their intention. However, it's based on however the minister of the day feels. So right now, we have a minister who is not the worst, but you never know, 12, 18 months time from now, we could be talking about Minister Barnaby Joyce of the NDIS. And what does that look like in his head? It's quite scary.
Right. And what about you as a participant? How do you feel you'll be affected?
My wife and I are both on it, and we've been having really hard conversations around what's really annoying is we just have to keep, like, adapting to all of these different rule changes. We got used to something, and now we have to find a new way to do our basic life. I have a quite a busy schedule, and I have a lot of jobs and a lot of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have time to worry about, am I going to have enough support? But that's the fact of the matter is, I will need to have a look at my funding and see if I need to cut back or change things and maybe have less quality of life.
Quality of life, exactly right.
For me, it's not. I can probably be a little bit, I have a lot of resources, but not many people do. So I really fear for those who are on their own and are a bit lost at the moment.
Yeah. And what can we do to actually soften, I don't know how we're going to soften it, but anyway, soften the harm, with the bill. What can happen, do you think?
Well, let's be very clear where the harm lies. The harm lies at the feet and of the hands of the politicians that voted for this bill. Any harm that is caused is squarely their responsibility. And it's up to them to make sure that harm does not happen. What we can do is we can stick together. We can do things like what we're doing now. We're talking about this. We're raising awareness. We're raising our voice. We need to speak up, and we need to speak up together. On a personal level, you probably want to have a look at your plan. Try to understand what's in your plan, what money you have in what bucket, and try to get as much support as you can at this stage. But in terms of the harm, this is a government problem, not a disability problem.
Exactly. I mean, it's really interesting. I'm so glad you've been very clear with all this. But it doesn't end with the passage of the bill, does it? Much of what these changes will mean in practice is still to be determined through rules, regulations and the processes that come next. So don't people with disability need to lead that work?
Absolutely. And what's even more shocking is there are four separate consultations open at the same time. So we have been bombarded with information, feedback, opportunities that close within a couple of months. So we have been bombarded. We have been asked to do this work with little or no recognition, payment, or anything. So the doors are open and people are willing to listen, but you can't help but feel that they may be doing this on purpose to make sure that people are a little bit distracted at the moment. But you're absolutely right. People with disabilities need to be at the front, and we need to be the ones deciding what is best for our lives.
Exactly. The other thing is, too, of particular concern as well, because this is a show looking at prisons
And I know that prisoners can't access the NDIS, which is a terrible thing, really, because they should be. Particularly, you know, people with disability in prison, that's a whole new thing, isn't it? Are you able to comment on that in particular, you know, when people exit prison as well? What would that look like, do you think?
Yeah, so just to be clear, you don't lose access automatically to the NDIS if you do end up in prison, and nor should you. The NDIS can help with things like very basic things when you are in jail. They might be able to provide you with a wheelchair or maybe some help with support in jail. Because it's important. It's important that people with disabilities who are in jail are able to participate meaningfully, and also accessibility. Punishment should never be your disability.
You know what, though? Sorry to interrupt you. I will do more research, but I've never heard of that. I mean, basically, other prisoners would help people with disability. But
yeah,
I don't think there's been any carers in there to date, from what I've seen.
I'm not sure about support workers, but in terms of equipment and stuff, it's very minimal, very, very minimal.
Yeah.
What they do help is what we were talking about, the transition period between jail and society. That's where the big lot of support is. But this conversation of, you know, do people in jail deserve
of course
it's not a big issue for me. The answer is always yes.
Exactly. I wasn't expecting you to give a really long explanation, but I just felt like we needed to really talk about that quite briefly. But, Jared, I think what would be useful at this point, if you don't mind, what I'd really like to say is that, and let me know if you agree with this, but it's really important that listeners do go on to the People with Disability Australia website and they can have a look at the explainer there, because it talks about the changes of what the 2026 NDIS law changes mean and what happens next. And they actually give a really good timeline, don't they, Jared? That, I mean, at least they talk about the changes, but, I mean, I still don't know what it looks like.
No. They do a fantastic job putting that together so quickly. And, please go have a look at our website. It's been wonderful to speak to you.
It's been wonderful to speak to you too, Jared, and keep up the good work, and thank you so much for providing a really fabulous explanation of the bill, and it's been lovely having you, and I hope that we can talk again soon.
Yeah, of course, I would love that.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
3CR needs members to survive. By becoming a subscriber, you're helping us to remain fiercely independent and free of commercials and corporate influence.
Are you a paid-up subscriber? It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Great value for 24/7 community-owned and community-controlled media. Please become a subscriber member today.
Call the station on 03 9419 8377 or sign up online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
and you're tuned into the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, and it's 4:49, and you just heard an interview with Jared Sandal-Hay, who is an NDIS participant and also the interim president of People with Disability Australia. And we talked about the passage of the National Disability Insurance Scheme Amendment Securing the NDIS for Future Generations Bill 2026. And we discussed some of the changes and also violations of human rights that could happen with people with disability, and in particular focusing a little bit on prisons as well. And now we're going to be going through to a few announcements.
From September 15th to the 22nd, The Return, a play by Alaa Al-Qaisi, will tour theatres in Brunswick, Ballarat, Keysborough and Castlemaine. The Return is the story of Marwan Abu Samra, who awaits the return of his martyred daughters Nagam and Rozan. Through poetry, music and magical realism, the play explores grief, love and what it takes to remain human in the face of unimaginable loss. For more information and tickets, go to the Free Palestine Melbourne website or look for The Return on Humanitix. Free Palestine Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
Missing your weekly dose of reggae music on 3CR Community Radio? Well, Ainiti Rhythms is back this Thursday night and will be bringing you the best of reggae, dub, lovers rock and dancehall each Thursday night from 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. So tune in from this Thursday night and I'm looking forward to your company.
Want to become a socially progressive podcaster but don't know where to start?
3CR has a wealth of podcasting knowledge and experience, and we've developed a practical podcast training course to help community voices get into the world of podcasting.
Our two-day in-station course is perfect for new podcasters or people who want to improve their skills and get some insider tips.
Enroll now for our October podcast course.
Full details at 3cr.org.au/podcast services.
Or call the station during business hours on 03 9419 8377.
Enrol now for our October podcast course.
You're tuned into the Do and Time Show with Marissa until 5 o'clock, and it's approximately 4:53, and I wanted to thank our guests for coming onto the show. We heard two extended interviews, firstly from Kelly Flanagan, who's a First Nations advocate from Fig Jam Collective, and then we spoke also with Jared from People with Disability Australia. And thank you to our guests for that. But before we actually finish, and we've done extensive coverage on this show about the upcoming two important events that I'm going to talk about. So we have two important events coming up organised by Unite Against Racism, and they are Don't Let the Racists Divide Us, Building the Fight Against One Nation, a forum at Trades Hall at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday 9th of September. And that's really important to go. There's a lot of speakers there, a lot of amazing speakers. And in fact, we interviewed Lucy Honan and Rafi last week, who are going to be speaking at this upcoming event on Wednesday evening. Really important to go to that. And the other one is a rally, No to Racism, Put One Nation Last, a rally at the State Library at 2 p.m. on Saturday, the 24th of October. And it's just really important to attend both of those events. One Nation is hoping to break through in the Victorian election. Anti-racists are out to stop them. Unite Against Racism has called a public forum at Trades Hall in Carlton, just to talk about a little bit about that in more detail. Be there to hear great speakers and get involved. Unite Against Racism is initiated by the Refugee Action Collective. It's approximately 4:55, so I'm getting ahead of myself here. Thank you once again to our guests. Stay tuned every Monday for the Doing Time show. And it's goodbye from Marissa. Take care of each other. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.